Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
We have seen a wave of legalization of marijuana across this country and a lot of promises made. Taxes on that product will solve all kinds of the fiscal issues for governments across this country, as well as the elimination of black market or illicit drug trade. Natalie Furtick joins us. She's the federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico and wrote an extensive article, 20 pages long, one that really dug deep into the issue and talk to legal farmers in Oregon about the trials and tribulations that they face as a result of some of this industry's policies. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Natalie, it was a great article. Really enjoyed reading it. You laid it out so succinctly on so many different fronts of promises made and a lot of promises not kept. Tell us, if you would, create at the 100,000-foot level first for the benefit of our listening audience of what is happening in Oregon.
Yeah, no problem, and thanks so much. I'm glad you liked the story. What's going on in Oregon is that cannabis has been legal there since 2014. And for a while, things were kind of trucking along with the legal market getting online, but there have been a number of financial changes for the legal market, and this kind of southern rural area in southern Oregon has seen an explosion of illicit cannabis farms. And there are a number of reasons for why that is. Some are coming up from California as California cracks down on illicit farms there. It's a very rural area, so farmers can kind of go under the radar better. And then also hemp was legalized in the last 2 years because of the 2018 Farm Bill. And so that's provided this other cover in the region that makes it hard for law enforcement to look at someone growing marijuana and say, that's a licensed grow and that's an unlicensed grow, and we need to deal with the unlicensed grow, but the licensed one can keep going. So it's just made it very complicated for law enforcement to deal with this problem. And I went down there to Grants Pass in Cave Junction in Southern Oregon. I talked with a lot of people. I talked with licensed cannabis growers, but I also talked with just a lot of people in the area who live there. One man I spoke to, he's a retired firefighter. He was a Marine. He fought in the Vietnam War. He retired to this area about 30 years ago. He's in his 60s or 70s now, and his land is surrounded by six unlicensed grows. And he hears shots in the night. He says he's being constantly intimidated by his neighbors. That's something that a lot of people there told me, is that they're facing intimidation, though not at this time outright violence, really, against the locals at this point. So people there are worried and scared. There's a lot of people I talked to who said they wanted to leave. To be clear, I talked to people who are Republicans and Democrats, people of different ages, people who are locals, people who have moved to that area. And it's kind of, legal cannabis growers as well. And across the board, people really said that they're very nervous about this sudden influx. And really, maybe not influx, but growth and of the illicit market being bolder and more out in the open and just on, someone's everyday road, rather than hidden up in forests where illicit growers used to spend most of their time.
You quote in your article that the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission oversees the state's $1.2 billion legal cannabis industry. They estimate that the number of illicit operations is double that. So the illicit side would be roughly $2.4 billion. I mean, it's astronomical.
Yeah. And one of the things that is especially interesting about Oregon is that most of that cannabis is not being sold in Oregon. So Oregon has relatively low regulatory hurdles for people who want to get into the cannabis industry because they wanted to take a lot of the people who were in the illicit market and make it easy for them to be regulated and make sure that they, you know, might want to pay their taxes and things like that. So compared to, say, Washington or California or Illinois, there's relatively low taxes put on cannabis growers in Southern Oregon, and there's lower barriers to entry. So that means that weed in Oregon is pretty cheap. So people who live in Oregon, one economist told me that he estimates 80 to 85% of people buying weed in Oregon are buying legal weed. But what's happening is that Oregon is just one of, you know, 18 states that has legalized cannabis. And states like New York and New Jersey, which have legalized cannabis, are not actually selling it yet. So there's so many places in America that are still buying illegal weed. And Oregon just happens to have a great climate for growing it. There's hardly any people in Southern Oregon. And so it's there's not a lot of law enforcement in Southern Oregon. So it's really easy for these farmers to kind of pick this as their home base, grow the weed there, and then ship it out around the country.
But that's not unlike any place that we would refer to as rural America, is it?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time in rural America. I'm from the Pacific Northwest originally. I actually drove across the country this year. And there's definitely some places that I would say are just as remote as rural Oregon. I mean, I drove through both rural Montana and rural South Dakota this year. But with the tall trees in Oregon, just like it makes it easier to hide something amongst the tall trees. And then the fact that both hemp and cannabis are also legal in Oregon, you know, they are legal to grow in Montana, but Montana is a much colder climate than Southern Oregon. So it's not as easy to grow marijuana outdoors. So it's kind of this confluence of factors, of environment, of low law enforcement presence in Southern Oregon, of not a lot of people. You know, if you grew weed in the middle of rural Kansas, one, people would notice. Two, it might die. And three, you know, law enforcement would come for it because it's not currently legal in Kansas.
Right. Natalie, let me ask you, are folks misled in this belief? And I was in law enforcement for 40 years, just so you know.
Okay.
And I was always curious about how those that really were promoting the legal cannabis industry really believed that this was going to end up being a real nice, cute cottage industry. You know, a lot of little one-offs, a little farm here growing a special little grade of marijuana or otherwise. Do you think maybe that aspiration has been misplaced?
I think that people definitely, you know, that is one way that you could describe certain parts of what we might call the legacy weed industry, you know, the small farmers in Northern California, you know, the hippies that existed in Southern Oregon, that did exist in weed for a long time. And when medical marijuana was legal, there wasn't billions of dollars in it. So it was still a lot of smaller companies. So I think a lot of people that were looking at marijuana legalization thought it would stay the same. You know, this is what they hoped for. But when you put a bunch of money in something, we live in a capitalistic society. If, you know, I talk to people who have no relation to the cannabis industry, who've since gotten into it. You know, real estate, people have moved over from the tech industry. You know, you've got big beverage companies, big pharmaceutical companies looking at this now. You've even got tobacco companies looking at this now. You've got people coming from all different sides, and that's what happens when an industry actually gets off the ground that has a lot of money. So I don't think there was anything nefarious in what people were estimating, but I think that it may have been a naivety or really hoping for something that is just not the way that industry in America typically works. I will say, though, that especially in states like Oregon, there are still a lot of small businesses in the cannabis industry there.
Sure.
So it's kind of got both things going on.
When you're first to market like that, that's what you expect to find. But, you know, as you just pointed out, once that, you know, the regulatory side of this becomes more stable, the whole nature of the industry is going to change. And, you know, and that's not unlike anything. What really struck me in your article, too, is the wide variety of people, Bulgarians, China, Russian, people speaking Hebrew at the store that are all on this illicit side. They're coming from all different countries, a number of which are coming through the southern border and end up with these illegal grow operations up and down the West Coast. Because California's having the same experience.
They do. California's having the same experience. California has more money that they've put toward law enforcement, especially in the regions where this is happening. And California has also not legalized or not embraced hemp in much of the same way that Oregon has, which makes it a little bit easier to navigate, you know, who is a legal farmer of some sort of cannabis crop or not in California. But California has definitely had similar issues. You know, there's, like I mentioned before, there's a lot of places in the United States where people are still purchasing illegal weed. Cannabis is really cheap in Oregon. It's the cheapest state. Washington State is the second cheapest state, though there are a lot of after-sale taxes that are put on for consumers in Washington State. But you go to Illinois, you go to Los Angeles, and in many of those places, the legal weed is still more expensive than the illegal weed. It's partially supply and demand. There's just not enough operators producing cannabis yet to bring down that price. But it's also taxes, and it's also, you know, the regulatory fees. Like, licensing can be really expensive. And in states where they limit licenses, they say, okay, we're going to put out 100 licenses. Those licenses become commodities in and of themselves, and people have to put a lot more money up front to get into the industry, and then those costs end up being passed on to consumers. And so where weed is still more expensive, one economist I talked to told me that he estimated that people were willing to spend 15% more in order to get legal weed. And you get benefits by having something that's regulated. You know it's in it. You know, if I go buy moonshine vodka, I have no way of knowing for sure that it is actually vodka. But if I go to the liquor store, I know that that vodka is vodka, right? So this economist told me people are willing to spend a little bit more for something they know is what the package says it is and that they know has been tested.
But
when you get into the
20%
range, people aren't.
How many states are actually regulating it in that fashion, though? Because I don't believe that Oregon is.
Oregon does test. Oregon does test for, I don't remember the exact things that Oregon tests for, but, you know, you're not going to find, for example, there's been some health problems with marijuana being laced with fentanyl or being laced with synthetic marijuana, and that can cause really, which just isn't marijuana. I don't actually know why we call it that because it confuses
people. The point I was making is you're right. They're looking for other foreign substances that are placed there. But they're not testing the efficacy of the marijuana itself, whether or not it's a 72% THC level or 62% or 50%, unlike the cigarette industry that can only have so much nicotine, so much tar in a cigarette, right?
Well, so when you walk into a dispensary in Oregon, it will tell you how much THC is in it. And I think you mean that it's not regulating, and you're correct at that. There are no limits right now on how much THC can be in something. But because of Oregon's regulations, a marijuana producer is not allowed to lie on the packaging. So if it says this is, you know, a joint with 20% THC, it needs to be that. So there is, it's you're right, but also, you know, kind of, it's like both things.
Yeah. So where do we see this going, though? I mean, you know, I've talked to people up in Washington. They believe that as long as you tax legal marijuana, there's always going to be space for those on the illicit side because it's just so easy to grow. You know, it's not like making a bottle of alcohol. To make a bottle of grain alcohol is difficult. it's a lot more time consuming, and there are a lot of different things that need to happen. Obviously, you don't brew for personal consumption, but in the marijuana industry, you will grow for personal consumption relatively easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that how I'm not in any way an expert in plants. I'm more of an expert in policy, but the people that I've talked to who are farmers or experts in plants, have degrees in this kind of thing, have told me that cannabis is one of the easiest plants to grow and the hardest plants to grow well. They liken it to tomatoes in terms of growing well. And people often discuss the future of this industry as something like alcohol. So you have people home brewing for fun. I mean, I have some friends who do that. I don't know how great their beer is, but, you know, it's something that some people like to do. But then you've got craft brewers, and then you've got, you know, the Budweisers. So that's the way that a lot of people from a lot of different sides of this issue see this eventually going. I would say, though, that one thing that people point out that I think is often lost in translation is just how long that took to happen within the alcohol space. So it was not immediate after the end of prohibition. You know, it took one of the legal experts I was talking to recently talked about, you know, it taking decades for that to happen, for moonshiners to disappear. And yeah, you still have some moonshiners here and there, you know, in Appalachia, in some other parts of the country, but it's not the predominant in any way, shape, or form. It's not the predominant way that people consume alcohol anymore. But that took a long time. Right now, we're not even 10 years into cannabis legalization, and it's a much slower timeline because it's been going from the states up rather than the federal government down.
Damn.
So even if cannabis was federally decriminalized tomorrow, which it's not going to be, but even if it was, it would still take decades before you're not going to see any legal cannabis or any illegal cannabis market to speak of in the United States.
What really surprised me, your article was one of the first that focused a little on the ecological impact here, where we're stealing water. We don't know how to to dispose of our garbage and our trash and the byproduct of these operations, because we don't want it traced back to that particular piece of land or locale or, you know, geography or otherwise.
Uh-huh.
And we're ending up with like mini dumps in many respects when we go in, when regulators go in and do shut down these illicit operations.
Definitely. I mean, walking around some of these grow sites was just horrendous. Just seeing the amount of pollution. I've done some reporting in the past on the cartel grows in national forest land, especially in California. There's worries there about the impacts that carbofurans, which is essentially rat poison, is having on wildlife. They're testing more and more wildlife in California for having these high levels of carbofurans, which a capful of these types of poisons can kill a bear. And it's very detrimental. It's definitely not something that people should want to put in their body. If they are, you know, using cannabis, you probably don't also want very potent rat poison on top of that. So, but it's also impacting the water supply in California and in Oregon. You know, a lot of these places, people use the water supply for their drinking water. There's a lot of well water use, river water use. There's been some issues in Northern California with one of the Native American tribes has been complaining about the pesticides and carbofurans that have been in their water supply because of the illicit grows on national forest land. It's a big issue. The National Forest Service has been pushing the federal government to give them more money to clean these up. But in Oregon, a lot of this was also on private land, which money for the National Forest Service would not necessarily be able to be used to clean that up. So you've got this on both sides.
Absolutely. Congratulations on your reporting. Really enjoyed the article. And thank you so much for joining us today. Know my listening
audience for having me.
Appreciates your time and your insight.
Thank you.
All righty. Natalie Fertig, federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico magazine. Read the article. It's a great job. You'll enjoy it. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
As I said, Natalie Furtick did a great job in the article laying it out, looking at it from the legal farming perspective and what they're dealing with. She talked about an individual that gave him a tour of his property, and as they moved around his property, they looked through the scattered pine trees, and you could see some partially deconstructed hoop houses, which are these temporary greenhouses that they're growing marijuana in. And a few minutes later, she says, shots rang out. And this individual said, well, that's intimidation. Goes on all the time. And she says that that's a word that she heard a lot when she spoke with residents about their marijuana-growing neighbors. Over the last 2 years, there's been such an influx of outlaw farmers that Southern Oregon now rivals California's notorious Emerald Triangle. And if you're not familiar with Emerald Triangle, go Google it. There's even been a movie about it as a national center of illegal weed cultivation. Even though marijuana cultivation has been legal in Oregon since 2014, Jackson County Sheriff Nate Sickler says there could be up to 1,000 illegal operations in a region of more than 4,000 square miles in Southern Oregon. They believe that industry to be worth about $2.4 billion at the present time. Law enforcement officials went on to say that people from every U.S. state and as many as 20 countries have purchased property in two counties in Oregon, Jackson or Josephine counties. Cartels roll in and offer longtime residents as much as $1 million in cash for their property, and hoop houses follow soon after the sale is complete. In fact, just recently, they shut down operations, a Bulgarian operation and an Argentinian operation, a number of Mexican-run operations in Josephine County. And what is happening there represents one of the most confounding paradoxes of the legalized marijuana movement, she says. States with some of the largest legal markets are dealing with rampant illegal production, and the problem's getting worse. Just look at Oklahoma, where licenses to cultivate medical marijuana are some of the easiest to get in the nation. And just recently, they conducted more than 60 raids on illicit growers since last April, and they continue to have to deal with it. And remember that the sales pitch is that this is going to provide tax revenue. Straining legal operators already struggling with the state's high taxes and fees are being put out of business because of the illicit side. And so what does that require? So now we've had states that have had, like Louisiana, very restrictive laws and permitting. And then we've had other states that have taken the other road, very easy or lax. Interestingly, in both cases, they require a lot of regulatory oversight. Those that have more lax or very easy, low hurdles to jump over, what does it require? Yeah, go figure. More police, more regulatory authority. And where the illicit industry has been successful is where, as Natalie Furtick pointed out, areas where there's less police. Big surprise, right? This is what we will deal with. The balance of interest in promoting this industry and recognizing that it's not going to be a cottage industry, a series of one-off farmers like going to a craft market in Hammond. It's not going to happen. We need to wake up. This isn't about whether you're for or against it. This is about being smart. If you're going to do it, you have to do it in a way that is going to be smart, that's going to work in the best interest of everyone. Not just those that are running around making billions upon billions of dollars promoting the passage of legal marijuana in your respective jurisdictions. The moment in time that you remove the ability to arrest or otherwise, we've seen it go down to the French Quarter. You feel like you're walking in a marijuana ashtray. I was in Memphis not too many months ago. You couldn't go anywhere and not smell it. Walked around the entire riverfront area into the warehouse district over there, the whole, you know, an entire day, never not smelled marijuana. The question is that where you want to be and what you want to do? And do you want to have the promotion of the illicit side there where you're having people shoot at one another, you know, maybe a carjacking here or two, possibly an armed robbery, so forth and so on, and turf wars, because that's what's happened in Washington State. You've heard the experts that I've had on there. So now we've had experts from California. We've talked to media reporters in Oregon. We had an expert from Oregon. We've had folks that we talked to in Washington State. I'm going to reach out to Illinois, Oklahoma, and New York and find out what's going on there to see if the storyline is any different. Because everybody has taken a little bit of a different approach, trying to be smart on weed. And it may be that we're just for this. Because it will continue to be an issue, and it'll continue to have the illicit side. It's a lot cheaper and easier operation to distribute and otherwise as opposed to alcohol. I know everybody wants to make the analogy, alcohol, and saying that it is completely synonymous with this industry. It's not. It's different. And the manner in which we're going about this is completely different. And the studies that have been done on alcohol and alcohol consumption and the health impact have been far greater, far more intrusive, a lot easier to conduct simply because of the scheduling of marijuana, and there's been very little testing. And most of the tests that have been done recently, there has not been a positive one yet. So just think about it in that context. We'll continue to report out on this. We'll continue to find folks that are not as adamant as I am. I mean, obviously, you heard Natalie, where she was on this issue. She's not anywhere close to my politics on this issue by any stretch of the imagination. But it's very well done, thought out, covered both sides of the issue. You see it in both ways. But you see that this balance is a very difficult thing to maintain. And that's the point that I was trying to make. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You know, I can't help but see the similarities as it relates to this progressive movement in crime fighting and the restrictive nature and the fact that there are smoke screens that are being put up all the time. I talked about Helena Moreno's comment that, you know, we should really focus on egregious violent behavior, not just violent behavior. It has to reach the level of being egregious. And I can't wait to hear on Thursday what categories of crime she puts in this new progressive classification of crime of egregious violent behavior, and that's where we need to focus our efforts on. Well, it's the same thing, you know, that's being talked about, bannered about by the same folks. Not to beat up on Helena Moreno again, but she referenced in her speech the other day the difficulties that Democrats are having getting a national voting rights law passed to counteract the restrictive measures going on in Republican state houses across the country. And I couldn't help but chuckle when I was watching CNN Aaron Burnett the other day, who basically called out the idiocracy of these statements being made by Democrats. The president goes down to Georgia to talk about how backwards that is. We're stepping back into Jim Crow and the times of Jefferson Davis and, you know, making these choices of who you're going to be aligned with. How do you want your legacy to be remembered? You know, it's interesting. In Georgia, and this is according to Aaron Burnett, it allows anyone to request an absentee ballot. But that bastion of Democratic voters over there in that state of New York, there's not anyone out here that believes that that's like a Republican red state, right? New York. New York's actually more restrictive than Georgia. There are very specific guidelines as to who can request an absentee ballot. Why didn't he go to New York? No, he went to Georgia. Because he wanted to make this thing about the South versus the North. And in fact, when New Yorkers had an opportunity to decide and on a constitutional amendment to allow anyone to request an absentee ballot, they voted it down 55-45. Those nasty Democrats, they voted it down. Those Jefferson Davis Democrats voted it down. And how about early voting? Georgia, the new law, it allows for 17 days of early voting. Once again, New York has 9. Why didn't we go to New York? Why didn't we go to that bastion of voter suppression, the state of New York? You know why? Smoke screens, political smoke screens. They don't even know what they're talking about. The other day, now it's not about how you vote. Now it's been shifted because of examples like this that are coming out. not to mention his own home state of Delaware and how restrictive that is in that state. Now it's about how we count votes. But one of the provisions in this voting rights bill is that every individual voter has a right to sue. Wait till you see that in practice. Our elections will be mired in lawsuits, and guess who is going to pay the bill? You, the taxpayers. Get ready, because it's coming to you real soon. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. So, how encouraged are you that we're going to have a meeting on Thursday and Monday with the new council? I'll reserve judgment. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays. Is it going to be a series of sound bites that are out there? And are we going to roll our sleeves up and get involved in this in a very holistic fashion and talk about the reengineering of law enforcement in the city of New Orleans, talk about how we maximize this? Because we all know that we're on a five-year gig here. We're not turning this manpower shortage problem around overnight. And by the end of this council's first term, 4 years, we're still going to be in the midst of it. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not any of these folks actually recognize, realize, and admit to same, and talk about how they will work at this every day over the next 4 years, so that hopefully in year five we're adequately funded, we're adequately staffed, and we're setting priorities here in this city that are meaningful. And I don't mean to diminish the term culture bearers, but we're often running on this stuff all the time that in many cases is really hard to define. And I just like to keep it simple. Those that are fighting for safety and security and peace and tranquility in their neighborhoods should be the culture bearers that we talk about every day. You want more? Talk about the ones that are doing it. You'll get more. Recognize the sacrifice and the hard work that people that are working within their communities, in their neighborhoods, on their block, the neighborhood watch captain, the block captain, or whatever. You want to encourage more neighborhood watch? Talk more about their successes. Protect them. Listen to them. They know better what goes on in their neighborhoods than you. Me when I was sheriff, me now, and any other person. Any leader in law enforcement would not ever say I'm wrong, because they would be foolish to say so. Your initial reaction or your gut reaction is typically right. Women's intuition in each respective neighborhoods are typically right on. They know what's going on in their neighborhoods. Give them a conduit to communicate same to you, and then do something with it. Don't just do lip service. Something has to happen. Whether that's from the council's perspective, it could be simple as lighting, street lighting. Wow. That's life-altering. But it could be a very important crime-fighting tool. And it's something within your reach, and it's something that you can accomplish if it's an efficiently run operation, relatively easy. And let's start chipping away at these issues. And for all of you in the business community, how about you hold somebody accountable? It's not just the voting public in the city. It's all those business owners that have financial interests in the city, may not live in the city, that can make a big difference as well. Step up. those that have redefined and re-engineered themselves successfully across this country. It didn't start with political leadership. It started with proactive business communities day in and day out. Why? Because money talks and BS walks. Like I said, let's just keep it simple. We'll be right back with Guy Williams. Stay with us.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.